It has been a great fest this last month in the fields. So thanks a lot for inviting me. I do it anyway, André. So. Okay, so we are going to talk about Hannon renormalization. And it will be split in two parts. One part will be about the geometry of the counter attractor. And the other part will be about the topology around this counter set and some properties of the parameter space. The part about the geometry of the counter set, that's a Stony Brook preprint. And it will also it appeared electronically already in the Journal of Statistical Physics. So all of this work is a collaboration with the Carvalho and Misha. Okay, so let's start from the beginning and describe the maps we are looking at. So we're looking at maps which are from the square to the square, and they have the following form. F is where the F is a unimodal map, and this is just some small perturbation. So the picture is, so this is the domain of our map, and then this unimodal part will be mapped to this curve, and then if you would have the degenerate situation with no it's a complete dissipation, then you would just have this picture. But now turning on some epsilon, you will see that vertical strips are mapped to horizontal strips, that's because of the X, and they are strongly contracted. So that is the order of this epsilon. So this is the class of systems we are, these are our Hannon maps. This is one technical observation. We will actually be working with holomorphic maps. So this F is actually quadratic light on the neighborhood of the unit interval, and this is holomorphic on the neighborhood of the square in C2. So the space we are actually working with are Hannon maps of this type. Okay. So, and the objective for today is to try to discuss pair doubling renormalization for this type of maps. So you can describe topologically how you pair double renormalize these guys, but to make time, we do not have a lot of time, so I go immediately to a more analytical definition of our renormalization operator. So the situation is as follows. So here we have our unimodal part, and let's say that it is renormalizable, pair doubling renormalizable. So in particular, we will have our fixed point here. So now, and now we turn this map into a Hannon, and we give it a little two dimensions, a little epsilon to it. Then what will happen is, so now this is the domain again of our map. Then what will happen is that this fixed point will still be sitting there somewhere. And if this epsilon is small enough, then it will have a stable manifold. It is going from the top to the bottom. It's a curve like this. And then what also will happen is, again by taking epsilon small enough, there will be a box here, which is bounded by two horizontal lines and two curves which are not straight, they are actually curves given by such an equation. And what will happen is you can take this box as small as possible. So what will happen is that this box is met to something here, and then it is met inside. Sort of, I don't know exactly, something like this. Okay, so then what you would like to say is that our renormalization of F, that if you call this the box D, then the renormalization you would like to say is just the second iterate restricted to this domain and then rescaled in some sense. But there is a little bit of problem, because we want to stay in this class. So what happens is that this equation actually defines a foliation here of curves, analytic curves, and these curves are mapped to straight lines and then vertical lines, given by our thing, are mapped to horizontal lines. So this little straight curve will become horizontal. So the property of our second iterate is that it takes this curved curve to horizontal lines. So we are not in this class. And any affine scaling will not bring us back in this class. So what we have to do is, we will have to use a non-linear, a non-affine rescaling. And what it is doing is it just straightens this box, it slides a little bit, and it straightens this curves to become really straight lines, and then we see our map. And this is what we define as our renormalization. And so it is the scary thing at this point is that we are using a non-affine coordinate change. And that sounds like bad news, but we are going to use this and abuse it, and that will be actually turn out in the end to be useful. So then, so I will not get into the precise aspects of how you define it. It's sort of forced on you. So let me go immediately to like the first result. This is the equivalent of an old theorem by Collet, Ekman and Koch. That is the hyperbolicity of renormalization for Hanon maps. So in our context, our renormalization using this non-affine thing, we have hyperbolicity of renormalization. So it is hyperbolicity. And let me also attach universality to it, because we add some specific new information. I'm not going to write it down, this is lots of epsilons, so I make a picture. So here is the one-dimensional renormalization fixed point. So the plane is the 1D map. So here you see the usual 4.6 expanding eigendirection, and we have this codimension 1 stable manifold. So the square is at the space of unimodal maps in the plane. So now we attach to that our Hanon maps, and what you will see is, it's not very surprising, and we will see the hyperbolic picture in 1D extended into the space of Hanon maps. And it will be again the stable manifold of this fixed point, which coincides at least locally with the infinitely renormalizable and non-nets. So then we have a little new information, which is about the convergence of our maps, like real and non-maps. And they come in a very very well described way, and it is we get something like this. If you take our F is infinitely renormalizable in the stable manifold, it will look like something like this. Y, X, so where this is the unimodal part, and this converges exponentially fast to the usual 1D fixed point, and then so sort of the Hannon part, the two-dimensional part, has this very precise form. This A is a universal analytic function, and this number, so in this, there's an exponential small mistake here, this rho is smaller than 1. This number B, this number B is going to play a crucial role in the study of this, of the geometry of the Cantor set. Okay, we will come back to the number B. Okay. It's smaller than 1, so there's a super exponential convergence to the one-dimensional space. Okay. So as a consequence of this, is what you get, is that if you take like the Hannon family, which is a minus x squared minus by x, so this is the traditional Hannon family. So we have our parameter space with a and b, and then inside from this hyperbolicity result, we see somewhere this A infinity of this infinitely renormalizable quadratic map, and attached to that point there is a little curve of infinitely renormalizable Hannon maps. And okay, so now what we are going to do is we are going to look at the dynamics of this infinitely renormalizable Hannon maps, and in particular at the geometry of the attractor, which is going to be a Cantor set. So let's get into this Cantor set. Coming now is sort of the key ingredient to our whole study. This is the microscope. So, and that is just sort of, you will recognize. So here we have our original map. This is two boxes. And here we have this change of coordinates to produce the renormalization. So this map gives you this little box. So there's also the other map, it gives you this box. So we call this C, which is F composed. It's this one. You take your box, put it here, and you iterate by F. So we have these two maps. And now you can repeat this. This map is also renormalizable, so you have your little box and your little side part. And how do you get this? Now you look at the domain of the second renormalization and you scale down and you get similarly the map to this interval. And this continues. This allows you to zoom in by applying different maps. It allows you to zoom in different spots of the counter set. And by continuing this process, you get to the nth renormalization. And by applying different branch choices of this map, you can start to zoom in to any spot of the counter set you want. Okay. Okay. So the study of the geometry of this counter set reduces to studying compositions of these maps. So okay. Well, let's first get to this counter set. So I need to define something. So this is just a choice of this microscoping thing. So you take omega n, composes omega n minus 1, and you continue like this. So this map phi is a possibility of zooming in to this counter set. And now there's a little lemma. And to prove it, you use the convergence of renormalization. And what you get is that these things, these maps, are actually contracting each time, stronger. So this allows you to define pieces of the counter set, of the cover of the counter set. It is the image of such a map. This is just one of these tiny parts sitting there. And of course, if you go to deeper generations of pieces, it shrinks down to points. So, and then, you can do the obvious. And the counter set, I'm not going to fit here. Okay, so now you get the counter set is going to be, of course, so you take all the pieces of the nth generation and you intersect them over all the generations, and this is a counter set. And let me summarize like the basic properties of this counter set. So theorem. So O, of course, is an adding machine. And these are basic properties. This is not surprising at all. So the Hausdorff dimension of this counter set is smaller than 1. It's an adding machine. So there is a unique measure living on this counter set. And the characteristic exponents of this measure are 0 and the log of b. And where this b is the average Jacobian. And so b is e to the power the integral of the Jacobian of f d mu. Okay, what else do we know? Oh yeah, n. The limit set of a point is either the periodic orbit of period 2 to the n, or of course this counter set. Ah, sorry, the integral of the log. No. This is an integral over this counter set. Eh? This counter set is lying there. It's an adding machine, so it's uniquely ergodic, and you take the average Jacobian with respect to that measure. And so, for almost every point in Lebesgue sense, the attractor will be the counter set. Okay. Okay, so this is all sort of what you expect to happen. So now let's start to look more carefully at the geometry of this counter set. Okay, so let's make a picture. So this is the domain of our map. And there are these two pieces here. And what we can do is, we can just project them onto the x-axis, and we can project them to the y-axis. You see this? Picture up here. So you see these two intervals lying here, and these two intervals lying here. So if you would apply this to the degenerate map, and then this would just be the usual dynamical intervals you see of these unimodal maps. But now you can go to the next level, and there will be some blur here and some blur here, and we can look at the projections. It starts to become messy, and the same thing here, there will be two pieces here, etc. And you start to build up these projections of the counter set. And now what is happening is that, so above the scale B, so if your blurs are large in size compared with B, these coverings are just following the combinatorics and the scaling properties of the 1D picture. So you get the construction as in 1D. Okay. So that is all optimistic. So but now let's look what happens below this scale. So below the scale B, this was above, everything goes fine. Below scale B, there is something bad happening. And the picture is as follows. There's a two-dimensional phenomenon happening which starts to perturb the picture. So if you have a blur corresponding to the degenerate case, it looks something like this, nicely nice projections. So now we were able to detect a spot in this counter set where, so we are in our Hannon family, and we took this map FB. And for this map, we were able to detect a spot in the counter set where this picture was turned a little bit. So this is the 1D picture, but the 2D picture, the non-degenerate case, the thing started to look like this. These two blurs, they were sort of coming on top of each other. And then we were also able to see that this almost vertical direction is strongly contracted by a certain renormalization. So you see that these two blurs becoming something like this. And that in this way it is destroying the geometry you expect to see from the 1D picture. So there were certain spots where we saw this bad behavior happening. And you see something like an unbounded geometry, for example. And this phenomenon has effects on the scaling property of this counter set. And in that sense, it has influence on the spectrum you measure of these corresponding systems. Okay, so this mechanism, this is very rough. You have to be a bit careful how you actually deal with it. Now there is this, and so we have this, our Jacobian, and our B we can use as a description of the diameter. So if you have your pieces which are larger than B, then inside such a piece, you see just a nice picture. The two pieces are left and right from each other and above and below each other. So now if you take pieces which are smaller than B, then Feigenbaum detected a couple of weeks ago that for most spots it is still okay. But we detected that there are also certain spots where the things are going bad. And bad, they are coming sort of, the pieces start to align in the stable direction and are collapsed onto each other. So this happens, but it is rare. And it happens on a small scale, so you have to be very careful to actually measure it. Okay. So let me describe the main theorems we get from this below B picture. So above B, we see these pieces sort of just nicely lining up along this parabola-shaped curve above B. But on smaller scales, something starts to go bad, and yeah, it is something it starts to fall over each other. And like the first result we have is that this counter set does not lie on a Seebohm curve in the case that B is not zero. So these counter sets start to twiggle, but only on a scale below B. So it's a fine mechanism. Another theorem we have is, And this is about rigidity. So let me state it here. So if you have your degenerate Hannon map, which is unimodal Cantor set, and you look at a Hannon map with a non-zero Jacobian, then you can look at the conjugation which brings like the Cantor set of the degenerate map, say the 1D Cantor set, to the Cantor set of your real Hannon map. And so we discussed this morning rigidity and universality, and like for the last 20 years this is supposed, this, the discussion was about these are the same motions. So the topology, the topological conjugations fixes the geometry. So this starts to break down. There is no rigidity. And this map is at most, Hölder is a half, so it's not smooth. Okay. And then, the last theorem about the Cantor set. And so let's take our, say, Hannon family. This is the A, and this is the B. And here we have our little curve of infinitely renormalizable Hannon maps. Then inside this curve, there is a dense G delta of B such that OF does not have bounded geometry. So that means that a bounded geometry means if you have a blur, then the two pieces inside have a distance which is comparable to the diameter of the previous box. So generically, there is not bounded geometry. So this phenomenon happens for almost every topological sense. So actually, at this moment, as far as I know, the only map which has bounded geometry is the degenerate map. At the moment, we do not have any example where the Cantor set has bounded geometry. Okay. Excuse me? Yeah. Above scale B, you're still fine. Thanks, yeah. Above scale B, you're still fine. But on finer scale, you break down. Thanks. Okay. So you can summarize this as there is universality. There are scalings in this Cantor set appearing which are exactly the same as in the degenerate one-dimensional picture. But there are also bad spots in this Cantor set, and bad enough to allow at most Sieröder conjugations. So the rigidity discussion we have to be a bit careful about.
Do you have enough evidence to conjecture that the D equals 0 is the only case?
It is very delicate. At this point I don't want to make a conjecture. I don't know. I cannot make an intelligent guess at this point. Okay. Yeah.
Is there some kind of universality in the way the bad spots appear?
So, Feigenbaum came by last week, and he showed us his measurements. And we saw everywhere the right scalings appearing, except in a certain spot. And we started to think about it, but it is still very fresh. And so, So somehow if you look in the scale of 2 to the n pieces, it looks like that the number of bad spots is like of the order of n. So it's like log of the side, the length of the thing. But hopefully soon, this is what has our attention at the moment, to get the distributional universality. But okay. So this is a summary of what we know about the counter set. So I would like to go to some information about the attractor of the system. So the attractor of our map is AF, and so we have our system here, and somewhere we have our fixed point, and we take the closure of the unstable manifold. So this is the attractor by definition. So it's actually a little theorem that this is also the intersection of the boxes. Okay. What is part of the same theorem is that the non-wandering... Yeah, this is true. It's not. I think it's not surprising. Okay, so the non-wandering set, of course, is also what you expect, is this counter set, union this periodic orbits of periodic period 2 to the n. So this is like the basic information. Okay. Let me try to sketch a little bit how this thing looks like, so that you can appreciate better the following theorem. This picture is going to be very core, very bad. It looks something like this. So here we have the one fixed point, and here the other fixed point. And the unstable turns around something like this, and does something like that. And then it continues. And then there's the unstable of this one, which is sort of lying here, and it starts to do something. And inside here is the spirit 2 thing. This has a little curve, and it starts to go around here, and it starts to go around here, and the previous one is turning around this one. So it is sort of a nested collection of unstable manifolds. So I don't dare to draw it further than it is here. So what we do have as a result about this is a theorem that, so you have all our maps are infinitely renormalizable. So what we do have is that, so if there are no heteroclinic tangencies, then this attractor is laminar. And what does it mean? If you take a is laminar, of course, away from this counter set. There's a lot of turning go around where this counter set is lying. So what does laminar mean? Is that if you take a point in this attractor away from the contact, then there will be an unstable manifold passing there, and this unstable manifold in a neighborhood you will only see other unstable manifolds passing by. Somewhere there might be hooks appearing like this, but they stay away. They are not getting arbitrarily close. Okay. So what happens if you have a tangency? So theory, if you have, say here, we have a periodic point, say of period 2 to the n, and it has its unstable manifold and some stable manifold, and say here we have a periodic point of period 2 to the k, say this k larger than n, and we suppose that we actually do have a tangency. So here we have the unstable. So then it depends on the condition what happens. So here we have the stable eigenvalue for this periodic point, and we have the unstable of this periodic point. And then what happens is that if the logarithm of the stable one on this side divided by the unstable on the other side is not in Q, is not a rational number, then if you take the attractor of the system and you is nowhere laminar on the attractor, and you have to subtract a finite number of stable manifolds. Of course, on a high level, here of course you see a laminar picture, and here you see a laminar picture. But if you start to zoom in, then these hooks start to appear everywhere. But there is this condition. So, in the Hanon family, So in the Hanon family, both phenomena happen. So you can so in our little curve, there are examples where you're laminar, and there are examples where the hooks show up everywhere. Okay, so now we come back to ergodic theory. The average Jacobian is a topological invariant. And so this is this needs a remark. The average Jacobian is an ergodic theoretical, a measure theoretical object, and there's no reason to believe that this has something to do with the topology, if you're speaking in general. But we have our renormalization acting. So there is something going on between with the geometry in a very rigid way. So you can detect this average Jacobian by looking in certain spots in the counter set. And what is happening is, so somewhere there is a topologically defined point, and this point has a stable manifold, and this stable manifold is accumulated with stable manifolds coming from these periodic points. And you can detect, there are many branches passing by here, but you can detect certain leaves in a topological sense, and these leaves are shrinking in with a universal rate. So the sigma is the unimodal scaling number. So, and then, so these are the stable manifolds coming from periodic points. And then there's also some unstable manifold coming from another periodic point. And this distance, and so if this comes from, say, the k periodic point, then this distance is related to this Jacobian. And then by measuring where this tip is with respect to these leaves on arbitrary small scale, you can relate these numbers and you can cook up this as a topological invariant. And so, but here we have the universality helping us. So, and now we have a little discussion to do. Again, it's about, like the last 20 years we have been saying, a topological conjugation is the same as universality and rigidity. So now we see that in our Hanon family, there is this little curve. And this little curve is parametrized by the Jacobian. So in this little curve, there is no map which is topologically conjugated to any other of them. So all these maps are different. None of them are topologically the same. However, we notice universal scalings in our counter set. There is universality, but no topological conjugation. So apparently, we have to start the discussion about what is the right topological notion which is forcing universal geometry upon us. Topological conjugation is apparently too strong. Okay, so let me finish this. A suggestion could be that two systems are equivalent if they allow the same renormalization scheme, for example, and then all of them would sit there. Something like this. But we have only one example now, so it's a bit too early to really fix something. So, do I still have a minute? Okay. So let me... It's okay? So we have so the final thing I would like to say something about parameter space, which is closely related to this discussion of dense hooks, and which is a phenomenon which is different from the 1D situation. So theorems is like the density of hyperbolicity, that is. Of course, you cannot do this in everywhere. But if you have your Hanon family again, here you have your little curve, then we can cut off a little strip here. And in this strip, we have hyperbolicity density of hyperbolicity, and of course entropy zero. And this has to do with absence of tangencies. So this is okay. But what is a bit what makes things a bit different is the following. me not write it in words. It's a picture. So here we have again our Hanon family. And here we have our little curve. Starting at... and then there are the intervals where you have exactly n times renormalizable maps. Okay, so and these points, they shrink to the limiting point with the famous rate. So this extends to little strips where you see exactly n times renormalizable Hanon maps. And they do their renormalization and then they end up in a periodic attractor of periods 2 to the n. So in 1D, this is a topological class. All these maps are topologically the same. So in Hanon, the things are getting a little different. If you give yourself two Jacobians and you look at this piece of the parameter domain, then inside here there are countable many different hyperbolic components. And the way you do this, so this is very different from the one-dimensional picture. And in particular, in this curve, there's a continuum of different topological types. And you see the amount of pieces sort of slowly growing. It becomes a very rich picture. No tangencies, yeah. And what is happening is that this is network of stable and stable manifolds, and there are hooks. And these hooks, depending on the position of these hooks, you get different topology of this network. And there are countably many different shapes of this network. Yeah, stop.